Sorry to delay you. I'd like to welcome you to the meeting where we will be briefed by the Chief State Law Advisor on the legislative drafting. Welcome, Ms. Lufundo. I think the briefing today is very important because we have legislation before us on the IKS bill. And I think the information from you will be very helpful. Let me start by introduction of the members of the committee. My name is Lindwe Masego. Sorry, I'm the acting chairperson of the committee. I'll ask from Honorable Matale.
I'm Kathal Matale, committee member. And my name is Nick Gournoff, also a member.
Good morning, my name is Agnes Stack, and I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lotried and also a member of the committee.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Without much ado, Ms. Lufundo, you can take us through.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, just a point of correction. I am a state law advisor, not the chief state law advisor.
Oh.
Yes, the office has been requested to run a session on legislative drafting. And when I received the invite, I was not sure exactly what is it that I'm supposed to deal with in this committee, because legislative drafting is a very broad subject. So I was not sure where to start and what exactly that will assist the committee. So, but after talking to Shanez and Renee, you know, because they've been attending this committee, I think I know exactly what is required of me. As a result, I've managed to prepare a document. And the document highlights the key factors to note when dealing with legislation. Starting with the structure of a bill, just briefly, I'll just take you through. I understand you all have copies of the bill in front of you. The bill has got preliminary provisions, and that is the definition, the application of Act, and the purpose of Act. Those are the preliminary provisions that you'll find in a legislation. Secondly, you will find the main provisions. Those provisions deal with substantive matters. You'll also find general or miscellaneous provisions. Those deal with offenses and penalties and regulations. Lastly, your legislation will have final provisions. Those you find at the end of your legislation, and they normally deal with savings and transitional provisions, repeals, short title and commencement, and schedules. I'll start with a long title, because I believe it's important for us to understand what is the purpose of a long title. The long title outlines the main objectives of the legislation. Without going through the legislation as a whole, you can find assistance from the long title. When you read the long title, it tells you what is the mischief that the legislation seeks to address. You can find all of that from the long title. Is supposed to do that. Linked with the long title is the objectives. The objectives of the Act is a section on its own. It's linked, it's interlinked with the long title. It also highlights the main objectives of the legislation. What is the legislation is all about? What does it seek to achieve? I would like to, in this instance, to alert the members, when you look at the objectives of the bill, you must make sure that the legislation concerns does meet those objectives, because in the beginning of your legislation, you outline all of these broad objectives to say this bill then you go through the content and you don't find how does this legislation achieve those objectives. So it's important as lawmakers to ensure that what the legislation seeks to achieve is actually addressed in the legislation.
I just request that when you've got the bill also in front of you, that if you could refer members to the page of the bill where that you are referring to, so that then it's easy to follow. Thanks.
The long title is on the second page of the bill, just before the preamble. Yeah, it says to provide for the protection, promotion, development, and management of indigenous knowledge systems. So it highlights all the objectives of the legislation. What is it that this legislation seeks to do? And then you find the object of Act in Clause 3 of the bill. When it's a bill, we call it a clause, and when it's enacted into law, you refer to a clause as a section. So it's still a bill now, it's Clause 3, Objects of Act. All of those paragraphs highlight the objectives of this legislation. And as I was saying, these are all objectives. But when you go through the bill, when you process the legislation, you must always take note of the fact that you must ensure that these objectives are actually met in a legislation. Otherwise, you will have objectives which are not achieved. And if there's nothing dealt within the legislation, but you see in the objective it's been referred to, then you should ask questions to say, but you're saying this is the objective of the bill. But you go through the content, it's not dealt with anywhere in the legislation. Otherwise, it will be misleading to have an objective, but you don't say how it will be achieved in your legislation. The other important factor to note is the definition, a definition section. It's in Clause 1 of the bill. They are placed in the first section of the legislation. They are arranged in alphabetical order and they are placed in paragraphs. What is obvious is that the word that is not used in a legislation should not be defined. You only define the words which are used in the legislation. The question that you should ask then is, what is the purpose of the definition? Why should a legislation have a definition section?
So can I just also intervene? Maybe I should say to members, because the bill is not something that is very easy, that let's raise questions as she takes us through, then, so that we understand better instead of waiting until she's done. Thanks. Continue, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. The main objective of having definitions in your legislation is to assist in interpreting the legislation. It provides clarity when dealing with the legislation in relation to the words or expressions which are used in a legislation. It makes you, as a reader, be able to understand the wording used. They must be simple, they must be clear, they mustn't be vague. Otherwise, why would you have a definition and yet you can't find assistance? You're supposed to get assistance from the definition section. If it's vague, then it can't assist you. Because as you go along, starting with the long title, to make an example, you're saying in the long title, to provide for the protection, promotion, development, and management of indigenous knowledge systems. So the question to ask there, what is in an indigenous knowledge system? It goes further to say in the long title, there's a part whereby it says to provide for accreditation, certification and registration of indigenous knowledge practitioners. Even there, you ask a question, who are these indigenous knowledge practitioners? So you'll find assistance in the definition section. It should help you so that when you go through the bill, when you go to that section that deals with the registration of indigenous knowledge practitioners, you know who these people are. That's what the definition is all about, the definition section. It should be simply, it's not supposed to be substantial. If your definition is substantial, it's rather necessary to refer to a section that deals substantially with that issue. It doesn't have to be too long. That's where I end with the definitions. Any questions of clarity as far as the definitions are concerned?
No, you can continue the questions they will raise. Okay. Yes, thanks.
I've already touched on the main provisions of the bill, which are substantive provisions, and they are arranged in a logical order. If a legislation provides, if it creates or establishes a statutory body, like a board, a council, authority, so you start with the establishment. Following that is the composition. How is it composed of? And then you go to the powers and functions. And then you move to disqualifications who are entitled to become members of this body. So it's arranged in that order. And then you'll also find administrative provisions, which deals with the remuneration, meetings, committees of the board. I will move to another factor which is important, is the language used in the legislation. The language used, it must be clear. Legislation is meant to be simple, to be precise. It mustn't be vague. And it must also take into account the audience to whom that the language is addressed. As an example, you should use, the legislation should use short sentences. By short sentences, if you're having a very long section, you break that section into subsections, you break that section into subparagraphs, so that as you read, you must be able to follow the statement used in the legislation. You must draft in the present tense, this is important. You draft in the present tense because you provide for now. An example of drafting in present tense, you would say the board consists of ABC members. You mustn't say the board shall consist, that is wrong. That's a future tense. With reference to the bill in front of us, clause 6.2 is a typical example. Clause 6 deals with the administration of NICSA. Subsection 2, it starts by saying the head of NICSA is responsible. It doesn't say the head of NICSA shall be responsible. So you see what I mean by drafting in the present tense. Also important in legislation is the usage of your words. You must be gender neutral. You mustn't say chairman. You don't use those words anymore. It's the chairperson. And if you refer to a person, you say he or she. So that is also important in our legislation. It should be gender neutral. I'll move to the most critical part that members normally struggle. when processing legislation, that is powers and duties. When to use may and when to use must in your legislation and what is intended. You use may, as you might know, when you give a power, that is a discretion. You give a person a discretion. An example of that, you can see it from clause 20, sub 1 of the bill. Clause 20, sub 1 deals with the registration of indigenous knowledge. And in that instance, it reads, an indigenous knowledge holder may apply to the registrar for registration of the indigenous knowledge. In this instance, the indigenous knowledge is not compelled to register. He may decide whether you want to register his or her piece or not. So there's no obligation imposed in this may. The other factor I want to raise with May, in some instances you say the minister may make regulations. That is a discussion. But however, as you might know, some of the provisions are dependent on those regulations. And then it's not a discussion anymore. The minister is obliged to make those regulations in order to implement the Act. Otherwise, without those regulations, it's going to be difficult to implement the Act, the legislation. So in that instance, even though you're saying the minister may, in actual fact, you're saying minister must. So I normally suggest, or I will make an example in the bill of this. It's in clause 31. Clause 31B, dealing with regulations. Clause 31, paragraph B. The minister may, you see that's a discretion, minister may make regulations regarding any matter pertaining to, you go to B, procedures for securing registration in the register. You go to C, matters which may or must be prescribed in terms of this Act. These two provisions should be obligatory. Because without these regulations, if a minister is exercising his discretion and decide that, no, I'm not going to make, I can do it in my own time, then there will be a problem. An example, in this instance, when you're saying something that must be prescribed in terms of the Act, the same example of a discretion. When you're saying an indigenous knowledge holder, you're saying, when you're saying someone may act in a prescribed manner, in such an instance, automatically, there should be a form, there should be a manner, there should be regulations that are going to regulate how the applications are going to be dealt with, meaning that the minister should have those regulations in place. So it is always advisable to split your regulation section. You must have a part which deals with the obligatory matters and another part which deals with discretionary matters. And in the regulation section, clause 31, paragraph A and paragraph D, those are discretionary matters. The minister may regulate in his or her own time.
Can I just find out? So that obligatory responsibility where may is not discretionary but obligatory only relates to regulations?
Those that must be, those which are necessary to enforce the legislation, not all regulations.
That particular, you won't find in the main body of the, but in the regulation. Okay, thanks.
to the duty, when to use must. As we know, must impose obligations. An example of that can be found in section 19, clause 19.1 of the bill. Clause 19, dealing with register of indigenous knowledge. And it starts by saying, NICSO must keep a register of indigenous knowledge in the prescribed manner. In this instance, there's an obligation imposed on NICSO. The other factor I need to raise is when you use shall, because you find in some legislation there's a usage of the word shall. Those are the old order legislation and also the tax legislation. You will find the usage of the word shall. Shall also imposes an obligation. However, shall also means something for the future. So that's why it's important to use a must in your legislation. Actually, the new legislative principles adopted, you no longer use the word shall. It's a must. If you want to impose an obligation, it should be a must, not shall. Shall is not used.
As it then makes clause 19.2 old-fashioned. Oh, so does it mean this must be amended before? Okay.
Yeah. And usually where there is a mandatory provision, that is followed with a sanction. In this instance, I've got an example in clause 28.2, which reads as follows. That's a sanction for not acting in accordance with a provision that is giving you an obligation to act. In clause 28.2, reads as follows. Any person who uses indigenous knowledge without authorization shall be guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years or to a fine of 30,000 or both. So there's a sanction imposed if you're not acting in accordance with a provision where there was a duty imposed on you.
So shall is used way. I think at that point you need to explain the shall that new legislation demands that must not be used, but rather must, and the shall that shall be shall.
Yeah, but even in this instance, Chairperson, you are imposing an obligation. And if you draft in present tense, any person who uses indigenous knowledge without authorization is guilty of an offense, not shall be. So there's an error here. And then I'll move to regulation subordinate or delegated legislations. You'll find your regulations towards the end of your legislation. These provisions empower the minister to make certain action, to do certain things which cannot be addressed in a legislation. Usually the regulations, they provide in detail. They address the issues in detail, they elaborate. So under those circumstances, what the legislature do, it delegates that power to the minister to deal with. But what is important to note in regulation is that the regulations concerned must be in line, they must fall within the ambit of the legislation concerned. The minister cannot go beyond what is authorized by law. If the legislation says the minister do A, B, C, the minister cannot do something else that is not authorized. That will be contrary to the rule of law. In some instances, the committees would suggest that before the minister publish the regulation, he must bring those regulations to Parliament. That is the purpose for bringing the regulations, for checks and balances. Lastly, members, is repeal by implication. What do you mean by that? Where you have two legislative provisions which conflict with each other, the norm, the standard rule is that the later law prevails over the earlier one. In this instance, in relation to the IKS bill, where there's something that is already provided for in another legislation, moving forward, if this legislation is passed into law, that would mean the IKS bill is the one that should be considered that addresses this, the issue of concern. I'm not sure if I'm clear as regards to this issue.
So that, I'm sorry, that would relate to, for instance, one error that you have noticed within the IKS bill is that there is what Ipson, what is the trade IPLA, the IPLA in trade and industry, and there's this one, and also from the the comments that we had from people, different academia or whoever that has made a submission, is that the IKS legislation there is much better. So does it mean then that we should meet with trade and industry and ask them to repeal that, or we leave it but take into account that the latter legislation prevails?
I've been informed, Chairperson, also when I was meeting with the department, because during the consideration of the legislation, the office did raise such issue to say, but this matter that you want to address is already dealt with in the APLA. The explanation that we received was that the APLA does not really address the issue of indigenous knowledge. The key here is knowledge. It's not about the material, it's not about a form, it's not about the object, it's about the knowledge, and it's lacking in that legislation. And I was also made to believe that there was a consultation between the two departments and there was an agreement reached to say, yes, it's fine, it can be covered under your legislation. So it can be expected that that relevant section in the IPLA will have to be repealed. Otherwise, it's going to become redundant if you've got the one legislation now that is going to address fully the issue of indigenous knowledge. Without the amendment already, when you have this law in practice, it's going to be the one that is going to win if there is a conflict between the two.
Other questions from honourable members? Welcome, honourable Pastor. Honourable Voronov.
Just one question on Charles and must. Obviously, you know, there is a preference when you will definitely use must, and it's clear. But you know, there is, if you look at the penalties, you know, you will be charged, and then you can decide whether you will pay the penalty or you go to court. So I prefer then the word shall there, and you see it is, you know, shall appears a lot in this piece of legislation, and if you put in must in there, so can I ask you, it will not be incorrect to use the word shall in certain instances. I understand your view of argument when you say it must be clear in the present sense. I agree. But if I charge you, it's still in the future unless I concede immediately. So your views on that.
Honorable Matale.
I'm not sure whether I think to some extent Nick spoke to the issue that the shall may, which which he has asked, maybe I should allow her to talk to that, because in the main the explanation of what it entails, the process, and why certain things are done in a particular manner. It's straightforward and simple, and yeah, it's quite appreciated. We're doing it without knowing why we do it the way we're doing it. We just thought it is a better interpretation. Now, you know, you get schooled as to why legislation is crafted in a particular manner. But thank you very much.
To what extent can then a bill be changed or amended? Does it mean then that the committee proposes amendments to as the prescript of the new regulation on new legislation or on drafting legislation, or should it be that the committee ask the department to infer to those amendments that we're talking about now, that we now like the present tense, the shall against must and whatever. But let's hear your comment. Dr. Lutrit, are you okay? Okay. Honorable Tuck. Okay, thanks.
Chairperson, it has been so informative for me now. So I think I've got the questions that I had have been answered already.
Okay. Starting with you, Chairperson. The bill is before the committee now. It's a committee bill. If the committee believes that the bill should be amended in order to address any gaps that the committee might pick up, that can be done. We can have the A list that is going to provide for the amendments of the committee. But that will mean now that the parliamentary law advisor, state law advisor, the department should consider the bill and identify the issues like the usage of shall. Is it a shall? Is it a must in this instance? If I were to answer the honorable member over there, for consistency, I would say we should use must so that we can avoid confusion. In some instances, it's saying shall, in some is a must. Moving to your clause that you were raising, the offences one, you're saying the person shall be guilty of an offence. But what are you doing here? What is the intention? The intention of that clause is to create an offence. It is an offence to do something. So hence I was saying in this instance, if you say any person who uses indigenous knowledge without authorization is guilty of an offense, what are you saying to the public? You're saying it is an offense to do ABC. And then maybe with the issue of a fine, is guilty of an offense and shall be liable. Maybe that's the only instance whereby you can use a shall. He's guilty of an offense and shall be liable, because it's something that will be determined at a later stage if you admit the offense.
So it means then shall is not totally disposed of, can be used limitedly,
yeah,
probably. Got enough? Do you have a follow-up to that? Okay. Fine. Okay. Honorable Madeline.
I think the question has been answered that it can be used. Yeah.
Tell a trick?
No, I'm fine.
Your eyes are asking questions.
No.
No, I'm just thinking that in most instances the shall is very often a peremptory shall, so it's basically must. But I also just, maybe it's being old fashioned. I like the shell. So
I think in the main here we've got old school. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I think we'll then also engage our legal advisor, parliamentary legal advisor. And bring those issues to her attention as we go on with the bill. But I think for the sentiments of other members of the committee, that the much as we didn't know where to start to brief us, but I think it was very informative, including some of us who are studying law. So I also gained something that we are not told presently there. But as the state law advisor, there's one thing that probably if I was white, I would be blue on my face. That's what they usually say. So because I'm darker, and the blue doesn't come out, maybe I'll be purple. The issue of, I usually argue with people here, even the committee section or the content advisors or so, even in other committees that I want to see, the issue of the name of the constitution, because there's continuous issue of referring to it as the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Act 108 of 1996. And my argument is that constitution is the supreme law and it's not an act of parliament. So it means the documents, you can't say, refer to it as Act 108, because then if that is the case, then you subject it to other acts. And yet it is the supreme law. So it's supposed to be the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. Right.
You wish.
I don't wish, because...
If I might have said it wrongly, Chair, I'm saying you are saying that it must not be called an act, yet it's an act.
It is not an act.
Okay. Anyway, maybe you are asking her, you are not asking me.
You can clarify that issue then. Because currently where I'm taught, I would be marked wrong, or if my references says Constitution Act 108, then I lose mark for doing that. That is according to the LLB that I'm studying, and yet I find Parliament still uses Act 108. So subjecting the supreme law of the country to an act.
Yes, when you refer to the constitution, you say the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. Initially, it was cited in full to say Act 108 of 1996. But there've been various amendments introduced to the constitution. And I'm not sure where the decision came from, that it should rather, you make reference only to the year, you say Constitution 1996, Constitution Second Amendment, Third Amendment, and so forth. I'm not getting your issue. You're saying it's not an act. That's arguable because it was enacted into law. That makes it part of our statutes. Yes, it's a supreme law of the Republic. But I agree with you. You don't refer to it full. You just say Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. That's the correct way to cite it.
The branch wanted to say something.
I actually just wanted to agree with you. You just basically say if you refer to it to Constitution, Section 12, so for instance, we don't ever say the Act number and then Section 7, so we just say the Constitution and then the section.
I mean, that does not mean that when you say act so and so, it then it becomes wrong. It's not wrong, because it is an act. So, yeah, it's an act. You might say you can't say, that also does not make sense when you say you can't say an act, yet it's an act. You know, it's just that you can't subject it to another act because it's the supreme. All other acts derive their existence from this act. You know, there is no act that is beyond. This is the basis of all the acts. But that does not mean it is not an act itself.
I think we should go back to the discussion. I mean, if you were in the house yesterday about convention and what's not convention, I think it's basically more a question of what is convention, and in this case, it is convention to call it the Constitution and not the Act. I'm not saying both of us are right, all three of us are right. But it's convention to call it the Constitution and not Act Number 8.
And it's not unconventional to call it Act Number
1. But no one does. No one does, sir. So it is basically unconventional, that's what I'm saying.
I can find out for you, Chairperson. I know for a fact that you don't refer to it as Act Number. It's just the Constitution of 1996. That is the new way moving forward. I'll look for you where that came from.
I think on behalf of the committee, would like to thank Ms. Bongiwelo Funga, Principal State Law Advisor, for enlightening us, for explaining the bill and for highlighting areas that we need to look at, and also ongoing and future focuses ensure that a bill is drafted in present tense. So I think that was very enriching and empowering. Thank you very much, ma'am. You are free to leave. There's the issue of the motion of desirability that we have. Ms. Isaacs.
Members, you, according to the new rules that was published in May of this year, all committees that's dealing with legislation now have to put the motion of desirability in front of the committee to almost get the committee's position on whether it is desirable to proceed with legislation, bearing in mind the broad principle of the legislation. So I don't know if we're going to, it's basically just saying that it's the opinion of the committee that legislation is desirable, and then we take all the contents of the long title to see what, in principle or in broad terms, this bill wants to do, and then we say, and the bill in front of the committee, or refer to the committee, be taken as a basis to scrutinize. So this is just before our public process, just so that we all have a kind of a common position that it is desirable to explore this bill further at this stage, given what you have received up until now, information.
Chairperson, thank you. I fully support this, and I think that we can, with confidence, actually present this motion of desirability, because I just think in terms of the interactions we have had and the need that was expressed of a sui generis bill, that I really think that we can proceed with this.
Do you have a second for that? Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no. Matali, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
No, I was looking at her as she was presenting, and I said, yeah, no, I agree with her. So when you asked me, I did, you know, move to focus, and I said yes and raised my hand at the same time. Yeah, I second that, because in the main, as a committee, we're agreeing that we should go ahead. I don't know whether in terms of the crafting of that motion we must write, craft it the way we have done here, because mainly it's us as a committee saying, based on the oversight and the presentations that were given and us having gone through the bill, we think, yes, it's more a decision to proceed. Yeah.
Okay, the long title.
Yeah.
That's the long title. Thank you very much, honorable members, for that. And then that then brings us to the end of the meeting. You know, I think the members got, sorry, I think honorable members received a notice that there's a joint committee meeting next week. I think also the chairperson at the NCOP is overwhelmed, because this time I speak to her or I meet her, she says, please, understandably that the cluster of 10 committees, so, and there's quite a lot, then there's a lot of legislation and that she's involved with, so I'll still talk to her, but I did indicate to honorable members that next week I'm writing exams, so I was also requesting her that agreeing to the joint, she chairs that on behalf of both houses. Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. What's the reason for the